Hello everybody, my name is Mark Clark, and in this episode of Hacker Public Radio, I want to look at Linux and BSD-based firewall distributions, basically distributions that are providing functionality that's dedicated to providing firewall functionality on the perimeter of your network. I'm not going to be looking at running firewalls on a sort of desktop client which you'll be using as a desktop computer, but rather as a machine which you'll use as a router or as on your perimeter of your network where it breaks out into the internet or into any other untrusted network that you want to protect your internal network from. The distributions that we'll consider here are based on the ones that I've used in the past or ones that I've researched. I haven't necessarily used all of them, but a lot of them we have used in production environments just to sort of test out, and you know, as you go along and you find functional newer distributions that have got better functionality, we use those as well. Most of them are Linux-based distributions, but there are two BSD-based distributions, and I'll go through the list of the distributions we're going to look at later. First, I want to consider some questions that typically get asked when considering a firewall. So people ask, you know, why would you want your own dedicated firewall? Okay, if you're a home user and you've got your ADSL router doing your firewalling for you, that's normally is okay. But those firewalls that come on those routers typically aren't very strong. After a couple of years, the manufacturer stops releasing updates to them. And if you want to add functionality to those routers, like let's say you want to provide VPN access or you want to start using a proxy, you can't do that. You can't really extend them. If you're SME, well, you want to use consider one of these because they're a lot cheaper than buying some of the commercially supported or dedicated appliance type firewalls that are out there. And of course, it provides a heck of a lot of functionality that a lot of businesses use, especially things like remote access to your office or secure remote access to your office, and also can save bandwidth with a lot of the proxy functionality that are built into these firewalls. So those are good reasons to consider running your own firewall. The next question I'd like to consider is, what do you get generally with these firewall distributions? Because they're not just firewalls in the sense that they're preventing traffic, unwanted traffic from the outside coming in and outside traffic getting out. They also have a lot of other functionality. Typically, they have proxy servers built in, such as web proxy servers, which is great for saving costs on bandwidth. They also have things like SMTP proxies, which can intercept all the SMTP traffic, scan it for viruses and spam, all those good things. And also other functionality such as content filtering. You know, content filtering is great at home or in the business. At home, if you've got kids and you want to control where they're going, what time they can actually, the internet connection is up and available, you can typically do that through these firewalls. And obviously in the office, you can control staff access to the internet. I know a lot of businesses like closing Facebook and other popular websites. I know it's not a favorite with a lot of staff, but unfortunately businesses are looking at trying to cut costs these days. That often is what happens. The next question then would be, you know, why don't you just take your favorite Linux distribution such as Linux or Ubuntu or your favorite BSD distribution and then configure it yourself? Because these firewall distributions are normally just aggregate a whole bunch of available open source projects that already exist out there, such as Squid for the proxying, Dan's Guardian for content filtering, you know, HVP for the web filtering of URLs in case there's phishing attacks or some kind of poison website that your staff are going to, and those kind of things. And the answer is because these things are not trivial to configure correctly. So unless you're a security expert and you sort of spend most of your time playing around with IP tables and that kind of stuff, it's better to have somebody else who really looked at it, put it all together and package it so that it works. Because the risk of getting it wrong when you're configuring your firewall, which is basically protecting your whole internal network, is you know, the cost if it's wrong is quite high because people can get in and then basically disrupt your whole internal network. So I would suggest, if you're not familiar, not a security expert, then try and use one of these Linux-based or BSD-based distributions. Lastly, I want to look at the criteria I use for selecting the ones that I prefer out of all of the list of available distributions that are out there. Okay, so often it depends on where the distribution is going to be used as well. So it's not just there's a clear winner. So in some cases, you want a distribution that's an easy to use and manage interface, basically a point and click interface. And many of these distributions come with a web-based GUI that enables non-technical people to maintain the firewall. You also want a distribution that's easy to update. You don't want to have to reinstall your entire system every time a new distribution comes out and rebuild up all of your rules from scratch, because that can be quite time consuming and also error prone. And also, you know, you want a distribution that is easy to extend, because some of these distributions will not allow you, or the way they're built up is not easy to extend them and provide the functionality which maybe they don't provide out of the box. Okay, now let's just go into the distributions that I will be looking at here. This isn't necessarily a comprehensive list of everything that's available out there, but just ones that I know about and have tried. So firstly, and it's also sort of done in order in which I came across these things. The first one is RPCOP, which can be found at rpcop.org. RPCOP is a open source, completely open source based package and community supported firewall distribution. Then I'll look at Indian Firewall. That's Indian with an E, E-N-D-I-A-N, and that can be found at indian.com, which is based on RPCOP. I'll also then look at Viata, which is a new sort of more router firewall kind of distribution out there that's designed to compete with Cisco and Juniper routers, and that's spelled V-Y-A-T-T-A, viata.org. Then there are two BSD-based distributions. I haven't actually used them myself, just read about them. There's MonoWall at Mono, M-O-N-O-W-A-L-L, wall.org. The O's are zeros in their logos, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. And then there's PFSense, P for Peter and F for Freddy, Sense, S-E-N-S-E.org, and that's based on Mono. Then I'll also have a look at, quickly, OpenWRT, which is basically a firewall for embedded devices, such as your ADSL router. Largely these, I can say these distributions fall into two sort of categories. Ones are, you can take a generic computer and install them on there, just like you saw any Linux distribution on your PC. Typically you can, you know, depending on the size of your network, you can get by with an old desktop PC. They don't need to be too powerful, these machines, because basically what they're just doing is scanning all the traffic that goes over the network. The other kind that you get are the ones which, like OpenWRT, which is used in embedded routers. So that's basically, if you've got your ADSL router and it's compatible, you can flash the firmware on there and you can put your own firmware on there. It's much more fun to do that, but also a lot more work. But you get quite a lot of functionality, and typically you use sort of ADSL flashed router in situations where you don't want to put a whole PC down. So let's say you own a coffee shop or you own a little restaurant of some kind and you want to provide free internet access, free Wi-Fi access to your patrons, then typically you'll use one of those, because you know it's stuck up on the shelf there just above the bar or in the, behind the kitchen, where you know it's not an ideal environment for your computer, and you also don't want people just to run up there and steal it, which is often an issue. So you know, you can use something like OpenWRT or even at home, where it's quite a lot of fun. So the question will be, if you're going to use one of these Linux or BSD based distributions, what kind of hardware do you need? Typically you don't need very powerful hardware. I mean, you think of the kind of specifications of your ADSL router, they're not that great. So you could get by with a machine that has 256 megs of memory. Hard disk doesn't have to be that large, it can be quite small. The hard disk normally depends on how big your web cache proxy is going to be, and also how much logging you're going to be wanting to do. But even then, a 60 gig hard drive, or even 30 gig is more than enough. And typically you want to make sure that there's enough space to take at least two network cards, because what happens is the one network card will get connected to the hostile environment, which is typically the internet, and it gets connected to your internal network. One of the terminologies that I picked up, which makes it quite easy to discuss the architectural design of your network with people, I got from RPCOP, and they sort of popularized it as far as I'm aware, is the green network, which is basically your internal network, and green for good or go, everything is fine there. You sort of, that's the network you're protecting. Then you have the red network, which is obviously the hostile network, which is the internet where all your attacks are going to be coming from, although you know, in 80% of the cases, most of the attacks are internal. But and then you have your third network, which is called the orange network. And this is basically your demilitarized zone or DMZ zone. So what is a DMZ zone? Essentially, that's where you're going to put your machines that you're going to want people to have external access to, controlled external access to, via the firewall. So you might want to let through, let's say, the web traffic to a web server, which you're letting your customers access. Or it might be a file server that you're letting your salespeople or remote branches access. And it's called the orange zone because it's with control, so there's less danger there, but it's still dangerous because somebody could hack into those machines. And the whole idea is that you then, that those people who have hacked into the machines are then prevented from getting onto the green network. The only thing they can really wreak havoc with are the machines on the orange network. So the orange network represents a, you wouldn't want to put your sort of file servers there that's got internal stuff on there and all that stuff. You put that on your green network. So only stuff that external people will need to be accessing. Okay, so let's get on to actually looking at these distributions. The first one that I came across a couple of years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, was RPCOP. Now, RPCOP is a fully community supported Linux firewall distribution, and many people use it and find it adequate. I liked RPCOP initially, but after a while you begin to notice a few, in my opinion, weaknesses with the system. One is that they don't have regular updates coming out that often. The second is that they have a lot of plugins, and which is normally great. The plugin option is great, but it's also bad if the plugins continually break your machine. You're not sure when you install them if it's going to work or not. You install it, and next minute you have a whole mess. Your machine starts working, and that's what I found with RPCOP. It just wasn't that easy to use once you started adding in the plugins. And also the issue that I found with it was that it didn't really have, it didn't come standard with the outgoing files. So it was incoming, and typically, you know, not an outgoing file, okay, that's fine if you've got a home machine, but if you've got a business or you want to, you know, to provide sort of some kind of control of internet access via your kids at home, you need an outgoing firewall to sort of block ports and also to be able to control websites that people are visiting, a content filtering kind of mechanism. So I find RPCOP great, but not in the long run. It didn't have the features that the other later firewalls started coming out with. Okay, the spin-off from RPCOP, this is part of the problem. A commercial company started using RPCOP as a base of its firewall distribution. I think a lot of the developers of RPCOP, you know, were in that company. A company called Endian. That's Endian with an E. And they basically took the basic RPCOP distro, and then they made it a bit better. So they added an outgoing firewall, they improved the user interface, they added some things by default such as content filtering. And for a while we used Endian a lot. Endian is really, really great if you basically not that technical. It's got a nice, easy to use web interface to configure everything. And yeah, it's great for small companies as well, where they don't have a big IT department and there's some sort of super user that's the company IT guy as well. So if you go and put that in there, you know, you don't have too many support calls having to go out there and sort things out. So Endian Firewall I would highly recommend for people, for home users and for small businesses. The only issue I do have with Endian is because it's one of those open source / commercial distros, you find there's some functionality that's only available in commercial. Also you get the feeling that they use the community for a lot of their beta testing, and they've been on release candidate 3, for example, for their 2.2 release, or at least some kind of release candidate for a very long time before they put out a stable release. But having said that, it's still quite a good firewall. One of the things that I don't really like about Endian and I suppose RPCOP is that I find it difficult to extend. When I mean difficult to extend, you know, let's say you know already how to use RP tables, or you know how to configure Squid or Dance Guardian, you know, you have to go into these machines and then they have a whole different infrastructure or way of configuring and controlling those configurations, and so you have to learn how that works. And typically it can be quite frustrating when you want to do something a bit more complicated, especially if you have to go and change their config files and understand how they get read and at runtime or at boot up how they get used to configure the actual machine. And then this is a limitation which I found with both Endian and RPCOP, was that if you want to do anything fancy on the red interface, for example, you want to do bonding, so you've got two ADSL lines and you bond them together, or you want to do load balancing across them, typically, in South Africa, you will want a local ADSL line, which is a lot cheaper, so that's only traffic that's meant for locally in the South African, within South Africa, and then you have one which does your international bandwidth, which is a lot more expensive. So you can use a local one for all of your SMTP traffic, for things like connecting to remote branches if you've got a VPN over them, all of those things. And that you can't really do that easily in Endian Firewall or in RPCOP for that matter. Okay, before considering Vyatta, which was next in the kind of list, I just want to quickly touch on Mono and MonoWall and pfSense. Now these are BSD-based distros. I haven't used them myself. The MonoWall from its website says that it loads everything into RAM, and this is one of its limitations apparently, because obviously as everything's in RAM, you know, you need a lot of RAM. You can't store everything on disk, which makes it only suitable for smaller embedded devices. Whereas BF Sense, which is based on MonoWall, actually it's designed to use disks, run off disks and all of those good things. So it provides a lot of the functionality. From the screenshots and the documentation on their site, I think this looks like a great potential replacement for PFC for IP COP or Indian firewall, and it also allows for more complicated setup on the red interface in terms of having multiple connections to the internet there and bonding them and being able to configure those in an ideal way to take advantage of the different basically least cost routing, as it were, for your local internet connectivities. But actually, as I said, I haven't actually used it myself, so if guys want to go there, just check it out and have a look at the PF Sense website. Okay, so I'd like to look at Vyata. Now, Vyata I came across recently, and Vyata is an industrial strength replacement for Cisco and Juniper routers. So it's much more hardcore, if you like. It's designed for those, like for ISPs that have a lot of interconnects. You're connecting major networks together, so not necessarily just home users or your business. You're connecting to your ISP's network and all of that. It's really is quite a powerful firewall and router. What I like about it is that it's easy to extend, because basically it uses the core functionality that comes with Linux and those various open source applications, and provides just a thin layer on top to configure it. Vyata might be considered not that user friendly to people who prefer to use a GUI, so I recommend that people who don't really know that much about networking or how to configure Linux stick with either Indian or PF Sense to configure. The reason I do like Vyata, you're put into those situations where you have, you might have a client who fancies himself to be a computer user and likes to go and mess with the firewall rules all the time, and then they break it and then they call you in. So if you don't want them to do that, where curiosity kills the cat kind of thing, power them through Vyata, and then they look at it, they don't have any idea how to configure it or how to touch it. So it might be considered a negative as well as a positive, but that can help in some situations. So Vyata is basically the firewall that we use now in most situations for the service that we provide when you install firewalls. Okay, so then lastly, I'd like to look at the group like OpenWRT, which are embedded devices. Now, these can be a lot of fun, and you can learn a lot from them. They're coming out more and more with GUI interfaces to configure as well. Normally, the hardest part is to make sure that your hardware router, the ADSL router that you got, or wireless router, is compatible. If you go to the openwrt.org website, they have a long list of devices that are compatible. Some of them are only partially compatible, all those things. But once you get it, the main thing is actually to now flash it with your new firmware. Once you've done that, then a lot of the functionality is available. You can download as packages. Typically, because these devices have limited memory and flash disk storage, you can install certain packages on them, but you have to pick and choose what you want to install. But they're quite nice. You can put things there like Asterisk VoIP servers on them. And so you can actually design some very interesting and applications on top of them, especially for things like restaurants, entertainment areas, and those kind of things. And a lot of, coffee shops and restaurants tend to use them to provide this kind of functionality. For example, you can install application like ChiliSpot on top of it, which will allow you to, either you have paid for or free controlled access to your local internet connection there that you're providing to your patrons, or to your neighbors if you're happy enough to provide them with access to bandwidth. There's a couple of other distributions that spin-offs are there. One is, I think, called Tomato as well, or Tomato. So if you want to have a look at that, have a look at the Tomato distribution. Okay, so that was quite a quick run-through, I suppose, of the various distributions that are out there. If there are any others, people feel free to let me know. And as I said, basically what it comes down to, my recommendation is to probably look. I'll say use PF Sense, but I haven't actually tried it myself. But from what research I've done, it looks like it's the best, easy to configure firewall that's out there for home users and for small businesses. If that's a bit much, you can look at Indian firewall. As I say, PF Sense is also nice because it's fully community supported, so there's no divide between a commercial and an open source version of the application. And if you're going to be looking at more hardcore stuff, look at Vyata. It's very extensible. It can leverage your existing knowledge into the various applications that you use, such as IP tables and Squid. And then on your embedded devices, I would use OpenWRT. There's also DDWRT, but I've never used that. OpenWRT seems more the architecture and the source code is freely available and it's easy to use. With DDWRT also seems like it's got this commercial stroke open source divide, and it's always, from what I could gather from the forums, admittedly it's a cursory kind of investigation, was that there's always this threat that they're going to close everything up in the next release, so best stick with OpenWRT. Okay, one thing which I think I should probably add at the end, maybe some for those people that need, you know, to understand some of the firewall terminology that's out there. Typically, when you look at these routers, okay, and you know, one of the concepts with the firewall is that all of your external traffic uses NATing essentially. So all of your external traffic arrives at the firewall, and that's seen as the source of or destination for a lot of your packets. Even if it's not seen as a destination in the sense that the firewall can have multiple IP addresses on it, it will handle all traffic that touches any of your machines on the other side of the red interface. So whether they're in the orange zone, the demilitarized zone, or in the green zone. And typically what happens is you use a concept called port forwarding for outgoing machines initiating connections in. So what you'll do is the machine will connect to your firewall, and you tell your firewall, look, if it's coming in at port whatever, like let's say 80 for the web port, forward it to your web server in the demilitarized zone or the orange zone. Okay, so why do you do this? Because essentially the firewall now is, you know, you don't have to go and configure each individual machine within those zones to sort of have protection. Although obviously that's a good idea to do as well, but you know, it's like if you're relying on some other people to configure those machines and you're in charge of the firewall, it's best to make sure that there's another layer of protection in case those guys don't do their job properly. So if you look at external access into your network, then you will use the concept of port forwarding. Okay, so if you're going out, you have the outgoing firewall, why would you want that? Well, you don't want guys on your internal network necessarily using BitTorrent if you're a business, because that will jam up your network and you won't be able to you know, actually do your work. And also there's all of the legal implications around that. You don't want people coming on your door and blaming you for stuff that your staff have been up to. So you might want to block outgoing ports. Typically the only outgoing ports that you really need to leave open are port 80, port 4, that's for HTTP, 443 for HTTPS. Okay, and if you're going to be doing administration type stuff, you can selectively allow port 22 for those domains that need to get out into external devices on the internet that they're hoping to maintain. The other issue that people normally like to look at for firewalls is to provide VPN access. Now, VPN access is basically secure tunneling over the internet for connections into your office. So you can treat remote users as if they're local. They'll see the network as local. So they'll get an IP address from the local network, the green network, and they can access all the resources of the green network. Okay, now when I say it's like being on the network, obviously the speed is going to be dependent on your internet link, so it could be quite slow and on the number of people you've got coming over. But this is really a great tool for companies that are using it to link various branches. So you've got a head office, you've got a couple of branches out there, and you don't want to pay for dedicated DigiNet lines and those kind of things, then using VPN over your ADSL line is a great way to do that. It can also be used to provide access to your road warriors, like your sales staff. You can configure their laptops to connect by VPN, so if they need to pull down the latest price lists or other company information or access the email remotely, then they can do that over VPN. Okay, another kind of standard functionality that these firewalls do provide, and I have mentioned it previously, is this proxying. And look, proxying is great for things like saving bandwidth, especially if you're using something like a web proxy. So essentially it caches all the pages people go and see. So if it's a regular favorite page that a lot of people go to, like some news site or the banking sites, and that, a lot of the images and things will be cached locally, which can save you quite a bit of bandwidth. So there's also instant money saving that can be made by using these firewalls. And typically on top of the cache, you will have a content filter. Content filters are almost essential these days. As I said in previously, if you've got a family and you want to control where your kids are going, you can enable, like, you know, you can disable adult sites, you can disable auction sites, IRC, all that kind of stuff. Or else you normally get disabled via the outgoing ports. You can just block those ports so kids can't use it, and like the Skype ports and that kind of stuff. But yeah, you can use this, and it's quite good as well. A lot of these content filters provide things such as scanning of the URLs, so they'll prevent users from going through to sites which have been hacked. Basically, they've got exploits on them. You know, so let's say somebody goes to a site where there's a video and the video basically downloads a virus, they're able to do at least some level of protection for that as well. And you can also normally typically have a blacklist if you want to add any sites which the full content filter algorithms don't pick up automatically. You can block those sites. So there's a money saving thing there, and there's also a security thing. So that can save you money. Once your network's infected and you have to clean your machines, that can be quite a costly exercise and disruptive to your business. So, you know, these firewalls all have a large amount of benefits that you can actually take advantage of. So I think that's really all I have to say. I mean, there's a whole lot of issues around that we can talk for a while longer on a lot of these things, but I just don't want to ramble too much, and you know, people might have got what they need out of the podcast already. One of the things which I forgot to assess all the different distributions against when I was going through them was the ease of update. And this is quite a problem for some of the firewalls that are out there. I found that for Indian firewall, for example, there is no officially supported upgrade path. Although given the upgrades from the 2.1 release to 2.2 seemed quite easy, just took a backup of the config files and you reloaded those backups. From the documentation, it implies that if the configs change, you know, the config file formats change, they only provide an upgrade path for their commercial users. At least that's my understanding as it stands currently. Viata provides a full upgrade path. Basically, you'll just use I think they're based, they'll use, I'm not sure whether they're based on Debian or whether they're based on CentOS. Okay, I just had a quick look there, and I see it's based on, sorry, Debian. You know, so basically, this was built on top of apt-get, and they have quite just run a few commands, and it updates us into the latest version. So, as I only started using recently, so I haven't had to do a distro upgrade at the moment, but it seems a lot easier than the other distributions out there. PSN, so I'm unaware of their upgrade policy, but I'm sure the information will be available on their website. As long as you can get the, you know, it depends also on how complicated your rules are. If they get very complicated, then you definitely want a way to be able to back them up and use them when you upgrade. You don't want to have to go and recapture all of those port forwards and IP aliases that you're using and all of that stuff, because that can be, you know, it can be quite frustrating. Suddenly your VPN users don't have access. The boss calls you and wants to know why they can't access their webmail when they're sitting at their resort or something like that. So best to have a upgrade path that is easy to use and available. Okay, I think that's it from me. Yeah, and hopefully I'll be able to do some more releases for you guys and speak to you next time. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.